Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the Flight Free Podcast. One presenter. One special guest. One mission to save planet Earth. Will they succeed? Find out in this thrilling episode of the Flight Free Podcast.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Flight Free Podcast and our series In Conversation With, where we speak to inspiring people about flight free travel and their reasons for taking the Flight Free Challenge. So recently we've been speaking a fair bit about flight free travel, and this month is no exception. It's an absolute flight free epic. So I'd like to welcome Edward Ginocchio to the podcast. Welcome, Edward.
Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a delight and a slightly nervous-making moment for me to join you because I've never been on this end of a podcast before.
But you've been on the presenting end of a podcast before.
Yeah, I've had the easy bit when I know what the questions are going to be.
Excellent. You just returned from a big adventure by bicycle and train and a ferry or two and even a bus, I hear, around Europe. So this was called 33 Rides. So can we start by you telling us about the idea behind 33 Rides? What is it all about and why you called it that?
Sure. Well, this all began a little bit more than a year ago when somewhere on one of my electronic screens, an advert popped up from Interrail, which you're probably familiar with. And it was the Interrail's 50th anniversary. And because it was their 50th anniversary, they were offering a special deal, 50% off. And I thought, this is too good an offer to refuse. And so basically, I bought a couple of tickets and thought, well, I'll worry about how and where and what later, but let's get the tickets in the pocket. And then, of course, I had the problem of, well, what am I going to do with this magical golden ticket? And I'm always one for a bit of a challenge, and so I started thinking, what kind of a challenge could I construct around this ticket? I thought, well, 33 countries, let's do it. Let's see if we can go to all of them, in for a penny, in for a pound. Can we go to all of them and ride a train in every one of these 33 countries? I wanted to get the best value I could out of this ticket. And then I've always loved bicycles as well, and I thought, well, maybe we can find a way of combining the two best ways to get around. So armed with a pair of Brompton bicycles, we started to put this journey together. And we set ourselves the challenge of riding at least one train and at least one decent bike ride in each of these countries. And that's where the 33 rides concept came from. But then we thought, well, that's not challenging enough. We decided we were going to try to visit the northernmost, southernmost, easternmost and westernmost railway stations on the Interrail network as part of this trip as well. So that's how it all began.
So you say we. So who's we?
Those of you who have been following our Twitter account, you will know her as Mrs. 33 Rides, but her name is Ina. She's my partner, and she very bravely agreed to come with me and pursue this ridiculous dream together. So it was a team of two, and off we set just a few months ago.
So you mentioned your Twitter there. So if people want to go back and look at your journey on Twitter, how do they do that?
Well, they need to go to, well, I was going to say twitter.com, but by the time you're listening to this, it might have changed its name to x.com or maybe something else, who knows? Anyway, there it is, twitter.com/33rides. I think that will get you there. 33, the digits, not the spelt out words. And you'll find more or less every day we tried to post something about where we were, one of the trains we were riding or one of the bicycle rides we took, sometimes some of the food we ate along the way as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I can vouch for the Twitter account. We were following you avidly and really enjoyed looking at where you were. So please do go and look it up. So it'd be really nice to share with the listeners why cycling and train travel and flight free travel is something that you are passionate about, because I imagine this isn't your first cycling holiday or train adventure. So give us a little bit about you and what drives you.
Well, I think the last time I went on an aeroplane was in 1999. It was my just before my final exams at university, and I flew off to Mallorca. which was a very nice place to visit, and flew back. And I think at that point I decided enough is enough, at least in terms of flying. Part of the reason was because where I grew up in Hertfordshire, so where my parents still live, they live kind of sandwiched halfway between Luton Airport and Stansted Airport. And it was around that time, I think, that the great sort of expansion of budget flights was happening. And I noticed that we used to live in a rather peaceful part of the country with just bumblebees and swallows flying around above our heads. And suddenly this started to change, and the skies were more and more full of noisy aeroplanes. Although it wasn't the only reason that I decided that maybe I could avoid flying thereafter, it was maybe the thing that sort of tipped me over the edge and made me think there must be better ways of getting around, which of course there are. And I've always enjoyed traveling and loved the opportunity to travel. So not very many years after that, I spent a long time looking. I have a wonderful map, which I think somebody gave me for my 15th birthday, which covers all of Europe and Asia on a single sheet. And I used to, I think I pinned it up on my bedroom wall, and I used to sort of trace routes across it with my finger and sort of wondered, well, what's the furthest distance you could do on land, you know, without having to take to the air? And I suppose the simple and easy, relatively easy approach was Europe and Asia, of course, which form one nice landmass where there's really no need to take to the air. And I started to dream about the possibility of riding a bicycle. And that sort of bubbled away in the back of my mind. And gradually it gave birth to my first long bicycle ride from England through Europe and Asia and down into China and Vietnam and so on. And when I got to the end of that, something I hadn't thought about actually until I sort of got there was, well, I've got to, presumably at some point you've got to come home again. And I assumed, well, you know, perhaps I'd jump on a train or something. But having gone all that way by bicycle, it would have been a shame to sort of unwind all of that distance in just a week or two jumping on a train going back. So I pedaled all the way back home again. And after that, I decided that was probably enough bicycling for a while, and didn't undertake any particularly lengthy trips for about another 20 years. But I suppose it just goes to show that if you have time, or if you can make time, if you can carve out time somewhere, there's almost nowhere on the planet that you can't reach by some form of surface-based travel.
Okay, well, let's bring it back to the 33 rides then, your most recent adventure. So you mentioned the cardinal points, and you quite quickly ticked off your westernmost point, didn't you? So in Ireland, Tralee, is it Tralee?
That's right. Well, I'm no expert in pronunciation. I call it Tralee, but I'm sure I'll be corrected by those who know better. Yeah, that was our first and relatively easy one. I mean, that was just across the water. So on our first night, we caught the ferry from Birkenhead near Liverpool up to Belfast. And then the next day, train through Dublin and off to the westernmost railway station in Europe. That was our first cardinal point, which we reached within, I think, probably 48 hours of starting. So that was an easy one for beginners.
And so you say you did a combination of train and bike each time. So is that how it started as well? You needed to do a bike ride in Ireland, took the train. Can you paint us a picture of how the whole adventure started?
Sure. We started from our home station in Birmingham. I caught a very familiar local train. One of the rules of Interrail is you're only allowed 2 days in your home country, but we wanted to max out on our home country opportunities as well. So we actually took a rather indirect, circuitous route to our first port of call, if you like. We went as far as Chester, and then we got off the train and we cycled through the Wirral, lovely part of the country, and nice cycling lanes, as we found in many countries, in fact, through this journey. Often the best places to cycle where there used to be railways, and for various reasons, some railway lines, sadly, have been ripped up over the last 50 years or so. And in some cases, they've been replaced with walking and cycling routes, which is lovely, although a little bit sad, because we like trains as well as bicycles. Putting that to one side, we found some lovely cycling paths. through the Wirral up to Birkenhead, where we jumped on a ferry. And in fact, then when we got to Ireland, we found a similar situation when we got to Tralee, currently the westernmost station, but the railways used to go further west than that, but again, not anymore. But we saw, you can tell, can't you, when you're on an old railway track, there's something just about the way they look, the width of them, I suppose it is. And we saw this suspicious looking track going beyond Tralee, further to the west. We thought, have we done our research right? It looks like, well, there used to be a train going further west, but it's now been turned into a lovely cycle path, which takes you another 10 miles or so out to the Atlantic coast. And that was a lovely day, actually. We only had, I think, a couple of days in Ireland, but lovely cycling. We were lucky, lovely weather. Anyway, yes, that was our first major port of call, I guess.
Okay, and then from Ireland, it was onto mainland Europe. So you took a ferry, didn't you, to Roscoff and then down through France and into Spain?
So it's a very comfortable overnight ferry from Cork in Ireland down to Roscoff. And then we really zoomed through France down to the Spanish border and across the border at Irun. And from there, well, Spain, of course, contained another of our cardinal points. So our first two cardinal points were quite accessible, quite quick to reach. So we were aiming for Algeciras in the south of Spain. So that was our next big target, I suppose.
And that was your southernmost point then?
That was our southernmost point, yeah. So we really sort of skirted round the right round the coast of the Iberian Peninsula, so Spain and Portugal. Had a lovely time cycling up in the northwest of Spain, first of all, so in Galicia. We took a train to Santiago de Compostela and then cycled away from it, which is the wrong way to go, of course. Santiago is the great pilgrimage centre, and you're supposed to walk or cycle towards Santiago, and that should be the end of your trip. But we somehow found ourselves going in reverse. Took a train to Santiago and then cycled more or less down the coast towards Portugal, and had three or four lovely days. So some days without trains. I think we had three or four days there. But some lovely cycling through the hills. It was a good time of year. If anyone's planning a similar adventure, if you start, of course, in the springtime, as we did, March, April, you can spend some time in the south of Europe before it gets too hot. And then as the summer builds up, we were able to head north into the cooler parts of the continent. And that way we were really at comfortable temperatures pretty much the whole journey, without having to take a massive wardrobe of Arctic gear and tropical gear.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Very well planned. So then I imagine you're quite familiar with Western Europe and Spain. Your partner's Spanish, right?
She is, yes. Well, Catalan, we have to be careful about that. Yes, but yes, we Spanish by passport, Catalan by tendency.
Okay,
yes.
very good. So how was it then travelling into the more unfamiliar parts in Eastern Europe? There's a huge culture shift.
Well, yes. One of the reasons why I love to travel overland, in fact, one of the reasons why I decided I wasn't going to travel by plane anymore, was that these culture shifts, and not just cultural shifts, linguistic shifts, geographical shifts, climatic shifts, vegetational shifts, all the shifts become much more gradual. And you see one country or one geographical region gradually merging into the next, rather than what you experience when you fly. Of course, you sort of seal yourself into a tube and suddenly, you know, not many hours later, you can be the other side of the world and in a completely different world. And it's a very dramatic break. Whereas when you're traveling slowly, these shifts are much more gradual, usually. And you always find this, that although you look at a map, here's the border, this is where one country ends and this is where another country begins. But it's usually much messier than that in reality, isn't it? And you'll find that there are border areas where people are speaking the wrong language on the wrong side of the line, especially in Europe. And of course, the history of that is fascinating and complicated and sometimes sad and bloody. But you know, one of the delights of this journey really was that we were able to begin to get a sense of how these cultures, you know, how they change across the continent, but also how they bleed into one another and how they're connected.
Yeah, that's one of the real benefits of flight free travel that we talk about a lot. We really try to communicate that, how the experience of travel gives you so much in terms of how the cultures connect and the landscapes connect, as you say. Okay, so you're on your journey east now. So you went all the way into Turkey, I gather, for your easternmost point, was it?
Now, Interrail is basically a European railway project, but it does extend as far as Turkey. And so that means a lot of going east. Now, then the big question was, where is the easternmost station? And it turned out to be a little station called Akyaka, which is close to the Armenian border, a little bit further north. But in order to get there, you have to cross the whole of Turkey. And Turkey, it turns out, is a big old country, which is great for people who love sitting on long old trains. So we wiggled our way as far as Ankara, the capital. And from there, then the adventure really began. We found ourselves a compartment on the famous Dogu Express. This is the very slow express train, which runs a few times a week from Ankara, way out east, almost all the way to the Armenian border. And it takes you, in fact, to a town or a city called Kars, from where you need to change onto a little local train, which leaves at an unearthly hour in the morning, once a day, and it leaves at about 5 o'clock in the morning, to the little village called Akyaka, where we arrived with great ceremony and were promptly arrested by the local police/armed forces, because I think not a lot of lost-looking bicycle tourists turn up at this little border. I think possibly a slightly sensitive area because it's close to the border. And people wanted to know what the heck we thought we were doing. But it was all in the friendliest possible way. And we were soon set free to take our selfies on the platform of Akyaka Station. And that ticked off our third cardinal point, the easternmost railway station in Europe, asterisk, at that time, at least. So from there, we headed a little bit further east. Beautiful place for bike riding, really interesting historical towns and villages, great roads, very little traffic. Yep, we'd go back at the drop of a hat. The scenery around there, absolutely spectacular, really quite wild, thinly populated, lovely mountains. But we couldn't spend too long there, of course, because we then had one more cardinal point to go. A long, long ride back to the north.
Yeah, tell us about that. So it was the Scandinavian summer that you ended up in.
So yes, from the far east of Turkey, it was. We looked at the map and thought, goodness, this is. Of course, we'd been going a little bit too slowly because we'd been to so many amazing places. I mean, we haven't even talked about Italy and Sicily and Albania and Montenegro and the Greek islands and all these wonderful places. We enjoyed them all so much. We spent a little bit too much time in each of them. And so the clock was starting to tick down and we had to get our skates on. And we had thousands of kilometers to cover to get up to our northernmost station, which is perched up right above the Arctic Circle in Norway, a little town called Narvik. But to get there, of course, you know, we had to get all the way back through Turkey, first of all, which was an adventure in itself, and then into the Balkans. Bulgaria and Romania and Serbia, Montenegro, Bosnia. Oh, we had a lovely time in Bosnia. Wonderful country, beautiful cycling, amazing landscape, totally unexpected. I didn't know what we'd find in Bosnia, but it was one of our favourite countries on the trip, I must say. And then heading north from there up through the Baltic countries, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, a ferry across the Gulf of Finland to Helsinki. And then I must tell you the story of our train in Finland. This is a train that I'd been dreaming of since we started to concoct these plans many, many months previously, really for a silly reason. But it's a train where you can book a sleeper compartment, which has an ensuite shower and bathroom. And so we'd given ourselves a bit of a treat and booked ourselves on a sleeper compartment going up to Lapland. But I need to share with your listeners a tip. It's a lovely, comfortable sleeper train, and it's all perfect. And you can have a shower and go to bed feeling clean and lovely. But make sure, please, that you have your shower in the evening, which is what I did. Mrs. 33 Rides, Ina, my partner, decided she would have her shower in the morning. And so we were due to get off the train, I think, at 8:30 or something in the morning. That was our stop. So half an hour before, whatever, Ina got up and got into the shower, got lots of shampoo and shower gel, whatever, soaped up and then pushed the button and a little dribble of water came out and then covered in shampoo and soap. If you had been another passenger on this train, you would have been treated to the remarkable sight of Ina wrapped in a towel, running frantically from carriage to carriage on this train, desperately trying to find a shower which still had some water left over in the morning. Soap, suds and shampoo. I hope she won't mind me sharing this story. It was much more exciting than if anybody who's been to see the new Mission Impossible film with Tom Cruise, where he's running through a train from carriage to carriage, trying to avoid falling off a cliff because the bridge has blown up. Well, that was nothing compared to the sight of Ina wrapped in a towel, running from carriage to carriage, with the clock ticking because we had to get off the train in 5 minutes because that was our station, and otherwise we'd have been taken far off piste. Finally, we managed to find a carriage further down the train, which still had some water left, and get ourselves rinsed off, dressed and ready to emerge in the north of Finland and ready for our next bike ride. Anyway, that was a tangent. I was supposed to be telling you about getting to our northernmost point, which was the town of Narvik. Well, of course, if you go in summertime, you get the interesting experience of having the midnight sun. Perpetual daylight. The sun doesn't set for, I suppose, a month or two in the middle of summer. Another exciting place to be. I'd never been above the Arctic Circle before, and it's beautiful scenery, lovely place. We spent a day or two hiking in the hills around there as well. It's very dramatic and lovely place to be.
My goodness, it feels like all of the adventures of a lifetime wrapped into one so far.
Well, it really was. I mean, we were very, very lucky to have the opportunity to do this, and it really was. And of course, if you had even more time, you could have done it all twice over, or spent twice as much time as we did. There's so much to see within Europe, and we only scratched the surface. Barely even that. Yeah, it was quite a special time to have the chance to see so much in a relatively short time.
Well, you only just scratched the surface of Europe, and it feels like now we're only just scratching the surface of your story because we're kind of running out of time. So do you want to quickly take us back to on your final leg all the way back home, and then we can have a quick fire round of questions and then come to a close?
Well, yeah, by that stage, I mean, I think we can go relatively quickly because we were running out of time and we had to go quickly. We zoomed south through Norway and into Denmark, and we had to sort of scoop off the last few countries that we hadn't managed to hit on our way round, through Germany and the Czech Republic, Austria, into Switzerland. I mean, some amazing, amazing train rides in Switzerland, as you can probably imagine, going through and over and under and round the Alps on some amazing trains as well. I mean, the scenery is mind-blowing. But they put on some special trains there, the trains that take you through the mountains. There was one where they had open carriages, so you were open to the elements, which on a nice day, which luckily it was for us, is quite spectacular. But they're, you know, the Swiss and their trains are quite magnificent. You could dedicate a whole episode or a whole series of episodes probably to Swiss trains. But anyway, quickly, through Switzerland, up back north through Luxembourg. Never forget Luxembourg, because otherwise you don't get your 33 rides. The Netherlands, Belgium, and then back home. And we had, of course, our last day. We wanted to make most use of our second home country day, as you're allowed on the Interrail ticket. So although really we just needed to get home, we decided we'd zoom up to Scotland for lunch and zoom back down again in the afternoon to wring out every last penny of value and every last kilometre that we could extract out of our 3 months ticket. And that was that. Then we got home. And now we're having to adjust to life where sometimes we stay in the same place for more than one day, which is not been our experience for most of that trip.
Wow, well done. I mean, what an adventure. And yeah, the coming home is always quite odd, isn't it, when you finish something like that. Okay, well, let's finish off then with quick fire questions. Oh, such a predictable question. What was your favourite part?
It's an obvious question to ask, isn't it? But and obviously it's very difficult to answer as well, because there were so many highlights. But I'd say the Finland train with the shampoo. Of course, the train that goes on the ferry going to Sicily, that was a great highlight for me. Trains in Scandinavia, and we were lucky enough to have these Brompton folding bikes, which make life so much easier to get about in the gaps between trains sometimes. And there were, you know, cycling in Turkey, especially in the far east of Turkey, just spectacular scenery. Cycling in Spain, in Galicia. Cycling in Istanbul. We went along the shores of the Bosphorus there and we saw dolphins. We were hoping we would see dolphins somewhere on this trip. And we didn't expect it would be in Istanbul, but that was as we were cycling along the shore in Istanbul. Some dolphins came to give us a wave, which was lovely.
Okay, so statistics. How many trains did you go on in total?
Oh, I think the answer to that is 176, but I will need to check. It was quite a lot anyway. It was an average of about 1 3/4 a day, but sometimes much more than that. I think most trains in a day was 18 or something ridiculous like that.
And what was the furthest stretch you did by train in one go?
Well, the longest single ride, I should think, was the journey across Turkey from Ankara to Kars, which was 27 hours, if I remember right. And we were half an hour late, so 27 and a half hours.
I bet the longest stretch on the bike wasn't quite so long.
No, we were a bit pathetic, really, on the bicycles. I think we certainly didn't do 27 hours in a single stint. But we did do some decent rides. I think probably 80 or 90 kilometres in a day, which was decent going for us. We deliberately set out for this to be a fair balance between the trains and the bicycles. Obviously, we did many more kilometres overall on the trains, but we tried to, you know, time-wise, we tried to make it roughly 50-50.
Okay, and was there a particular train that was most memorable or remarkable?
I'm going to pick one that we haven't talked about yet. I'm going to pick a train in Albania, because the Albanian train network is basically somewhere between non-existent and being rebuilt at the moment. But there is one train which runs once a week. In fact, twice a week. It runs on Saturday and Sunday for about 40 kilometres. And we basically structured our entire year around making sure we arrived in Albania on the right day to catch this one train, which leaves once or maybe twice a week. And we arrived in the port of Durres on the Albanian coast. Wonderful new modern port, big sign, welcome to Albania, this way to the railway station. No railway tracks, no trains. My heart sank through my belly, through my hips, through my toes and out onto the floor. It was the worst moment of my life, because this was what we'd been building up to, this one wonderful Albanian train. And it clearly wasn't there, and it clearly wasn't coming anytime soon, because there were no railway tracks. The whole thing was being rebuilt. And nobody there. We asked around, they said, trains? No trains, you must be joking. Come back in 10 years, they said. So we set off on our bicycles in the direction where it was clear that once upon a time there must have been some railway tracks. And we kept going and going and going. And after 20 kilometres or so, lo and behold, the tracks started again. And we found a place that looked a little bit like a railway station. And we asked, there was a little cafe outside, and there was a bunch of people there. And we said, Is there a train? Have we found the Albanian train? And the chap looked at his watch and he said, yeah, left about half an hour ago, mate. Sorry. I could have wept. I did. I said, it can't be true. It can't be true. Ask someone else. And this is a tip for any of your listeners. Never accept first opinions on, especially when it's bad news relating to trains. And we asked around, and it turned out that it hadn't left half an hour ago, and it was coming in about an hour. And so we camped on the platform, and this lovely little train, it's the only train in Albania, had one locomotive and one ancient little carriage tugged behind it. And it was absolutely splendid. And that was my long answer to your quickfire question.
Wow. What a way to end. I mean, couldn't have a more entertaining finish there. Well, thank you so much, Edward. What a fantastic story and really inspiring. And I hope that the listeners are inspired just to even explore a tiny bit more, if not do the 3-month epic that you did, traveling to every country on the Interrail network. And yeah, I would definitely would urge the listeners to go and read more about this, because with the luxury of time, there are many, many other entertaining stories on there. So thanks for sharing just a few of them with us on this podcast episode, Edward. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. And yeah, thank you to the listeners. Thank you for listening, and join us again next month when we'll be having another inspiring conversation about flight-free travel and about the joy of staying grounded. So thank you and goodbye.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Flight Free UK. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to join the Flight Free Challenge for 2023. All you need to know for your challenge is at flightfree.co.uk. The Flight Free Podcast will return!